Hi, KakeMai. This is Radio New Zealand International, Stateline Pacifica. I'm Megan Whelan. Today, economics ministers and officials meet to discuss plans of increasing collaboration and cooperation. Fiji politicians welcome their first post-coup talks with the interim regime leader. The Marshals on track for an internet courtesy of the US Army. Pacific countries may struggle to fill the gap if Australia's Pacific patrol boat program is scrapped. Police in Papua New Guinea on high alert after receiving threats of a possible attack on its headquarters. And we hear that Tonga has given a clear account of the country's human rights situation to the United Nations Human Rights Council. Economic ministers and officials from the 16 Pacific Forum Island countries have been meeting behind closed doors to discuss ways of increasing collaboration and cooperation on a number of issues affecting the region. Dan Rathbone is in Port Vila covering the 12th Fed Forum Economic Ministers meeting.
Key issues are obviously all to do with economics and improving the economy of all of these countries, local mobility, food security, purchasing of fuel. There's a regional audit initiative in which they're trying to rationalize audit services through the region. But most importantly, with this global economic crisis, which so far the region hasn't been affected by, but it will.
On the global economic crisis, due to be spoken to by the Asian Development Bank and told that structural reform is key for surviving
that? Yes, that's the case. The UNDP is making a presentation in conjunction with the International Monetary Fund, or the Pacific Division of that. They're looking at how countries need to strengthen their positions by cutting their spending. They want their tax systems, and they also want more private investment encouraged.
You mentioned the bulk purchasing of fuel. They met late last month at official level and discussed that. Are the leaders expecting to discuss that and move it on to them?
Yes, most definitely. That meeting in Auckland came up with these in the Pacific are interested in the bulk purchase of fuel. Those that are will have presented to them a means of going about that and how they might approach with the major oil companies and whatever, and how they might, I suppose, manage the storage of that oil and how they might transport it between the countries, that sort of thing. So at the end of this meeting, there should be a clear idea on just what will happen over bulk fuel.
And will there be other concrete proposals on the other issues to come out of it as well?
To have made this focus on bulk fuel is seen as one of the most significant gains under the Pacific Plan on the cooperation, collaboration. There's also going to be this, like I mentioned earlier, aimed at rationalizing audit services across the region. And both of these are key parts of, under the Pacific Plan. There are a lot of other issues too, of course, that they're going to be looking at. They're going to be looking at food security, which the fuel to a large extent because countries are very dependent on imports, and to improve security of food, they want to encourage the production of a lot more food at home for people to start producing their own food. This is such a thing going on for a while, but officials from the SPC say they want to see a greater commitment and for the ministers to lead this.
Don Wiseman reporting from Port Vila. Political leaders who met Fiji's interim Prime Minister this week say their meeting didn't achieve much, but it broke the ice. Commodore Frank Bainimarama included 14 political parties in Suva on Monday. The first such gathering should be carried out for two in 2006. Tom Ryan, the General Secretary of the National Federation Party, says the meeting was a positive beginning, but there's no guarantee it's going to end perfectly for everyone.
There was a tense atmosphere in the beginning, but I think it quickly faded away, and again, the forum, really the depth and the positivity of the meeting developed as we went through the day. So it was a positive meeting overall. I don't think we can place too much on it at this stage.
Paramount Ryan says he believes it was an educational meeting for Commodore Bainimarama, as he was able to interact with Pfizer close to him for the first time. After the talks, Commodore Bainimarama released a statement saying Fiji must return to parliamentary democracy.
I wish to assure you that the interim government is fully committed to attaining this goal, and we must achieve this as soon as practically possible. to go forward and to ensure that we not only restore, but also able to sustain parliamentary government, we need to ask. Now, 38 years history as an independent nation, what are the lessons learned from our experience today?
The meeting was to discuss the agenda for the proposed President Political Forum, which the interim government hopes the Commonwealth and the United Nations will be involved in. The leaders agreed to now take some time to put suggestions on paper for what should be discussed at that forum. The Austin Prime Minister, Lasini Angarase, says he made 4 suggestions at the meeting.
In my list is, of course, the next year, and next to that was the changes and constitutional changes are one other issue, so we will be adding a few more items on our list.
Meanwhile, a number of civil society groups have complained that they were not included in the meeting, but Lasini Angarapo says the interim Prime Minister has opened the door for them to be involved next time.
That the forum itself, the forum proper, that's when the UN and the Commonwealth come in to chair. He hopes that it will be a much wider group, and the forum is to consist of not only political leaders, but other stakeholders.
Mr. Angarapo says the next meeting is likely to be in the first week of December, once the political parties have made their submissions on the agenda. He says there's likely to be other interactions in the meantime, including one-on-one dialogue between the interim Prime Minister and the other members. A $100 million US dollar army project to lay a fiber optic cable to its base in the Marshall Islands is set to transform telecommunications in the Marshall Islands. The US Army is laying the cables from Guam to Kwajalein onto the Reagan Test Site, a key part of what sometimes referred to as the Star Wars missile defense system. Our correspondent, Jeff Johnson, tells Jeremy Rose the Marshall Islands government decision to commit $18 million US dollars to the project will see high-speed broadband available in the islands for the first time.
Fiber cable will exponentially increase the communications capacity of the Marshall Islands. This is a submarine cable that will be laid from Guam into the Marshall Islands. It just offers huge possible benefits, particularly access to broadband internet. First and foremost is this cable is coming in because the U.S. Army wants it at the missile testing range at Kwajalein. So the Army had this on the board for maybe 4 or 5 years with plans to lay the cable into Kwajalein, which is where the missile range is. And so both the Federated States of Micronesia and the Marshall Islands telecom outfits have been preparing to piggyback on top of the Army's project. The Federated States of Micronesia and the Marshall Islands will send their own branches off of that main cable for the Army. And so the Marshalls will end up having a cable presumably going into Ebi and then Madras, which are the two main urban centers. The applications are in business, in healthcare, in education. The applications are as numerous as our imagination is. The key thing about this fiber optic cable is that right now, Kwajalein cannot provide so-called real-time data transmission during missile tests. But by having the fiber optic cable, it will allow them to transmit these huge volumes of data, you know, images, radar, all the information coming off the testing equipment back to the U.S. So it will no longer be necessary for contractors or other, the Air Force or whoever's using the missile range. They will not need to send out hundreds and hundreds of technicians to Kwajalein. They can sit back in their laboratories on the East Coast USA and watch what's happening and actually control the missile test from a remote location, saving them a lot of money.
So does that actually have some potentially negative economic implications?
Absolutely, and the economic situation has already been a big issue at the missile range because since last year, the Army has started laying off large numbers of both American and Marshallese personnel.
Mr. Johnson speaking to Jeremy Rose. You're listening to Dateline Pacific from Radio New Zealand International. Pacific countries may struggle to fill the gap left by the possible non-extension of Australia's Pacific patrol boat program. A recent Defence Department report recommended scrapping the program, which provides 22 patrol boats and Navy support staff to help solve Pacific Island nations' security borders. It's been operating successfully for 20 years. The country's police forces
has recommended scrapping the program when the first of the boats reached retirement in 2017. The Solomon Islands Deputy Prime Minister Fred Bonner said if the program was to be scrapped, his country would have to seriously relook at how to maintain the important work of the patrol boats for the future.
Given the role that it is very important that surveillance work is done in the exclusive economic zones of the Pacific Island countries, parts of surveillance and patrolling the borders of the island nations. So we've got to relook at that and maybe negotiate with Australia how best we could continue on that.
The cost of keeping the boats at sea is around $6,000 a day. Furthermore, the defence report says the Pacific boats have struggled to crew and maintain the boats, achieving only 36 sea days a year for a boat, down from an expected 50 days. Dr. Andrew Davies of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute says not all Pacific countries involved in the program have developed their own capability to manage this area.
What they would have to do if they wanted to maintain a capability like that would be to go out onto the world market and see what was available. And it might be that they could find similar capability boats elsewhere, but the question is whether they'd have the resources to actually buy them.
Countries like Solomon Islands desperately need capacity building to continue. And Fred Bonner says training programs for naval officers in Pacific Islands should be strengthened.
With the improvement of technology at the moment, those need for training so that our local people could grasp the new technology that is in place in terms of surveillance work between the countries. It's important that training and equipping the officers with new technology is very important.
Dr. Davies says that the risk of losing a foothold of influence in the region is one that Australia, together with New Zealand, would want to avoid.
There's always the option for other countries to step up to the plate, as it were, and it's one of the things that Australia and New Zealand's been careful to guard against in the past. So it's entirely possible that a rethink could be in order at some stage. It's entirely likely that an Australian or New Zealand government might want to provide help in some other way. It could be that either government might look to their own budget, for example, as a way to manage the program into the future.
Meanwhile, France's Defence Minister signalled a move to enable greater cooperation with Australia in the Pacific. France was setting up a major naval base in New Caledonia and would provide access to Australia. This is Johnny Blake.
The Mount Hagen police in Papua New Guinea are on high alert after receiving threats of a possible attack on their headquarters. The next day, they received calls about a plan to raise the police station and blow off a container inside it holding ballot papers for the governor's election. The police spokesman, Superintendent Dominic Kaka, spoke to the boss of Anoda.
Police are on alert. There's been a number of threats issued, and we are not taking them lightly. So we've actually started a joint operation in the Western Island province.
What threats have been issued, Dominic?
Threats issued by people who's been trying to check you who. They mentioned that they were going to raid the Mount Hagen police station and blow up the container there containing the ballot papers from the last election. That is subject to a lot of disputed returns now between the current partner, Tom Ponga, and the former governor, Pius Winky. The court has made a decision for a recount, and the threats now that papers will be blown up, I mean the container containing the papers.
Any clue as to who could have made the threat?
Not at this point in time, but we are investigating and also we will reveal something, we will do in the course of the investigation.
Yes, that police is in emergency mode or is on alert. What action is being taken?
who basically set up manpower at the police station, and the provincial police are actually meeting with vigilant checks of people going in and out of Worcester. They are not back in the town.
But I think the police commander is quoted as saying that police will shoot to kill anyone who tries to blow him up, so it's really serious.
He's actually issued instructions to the police to ensure that threats are unnecessary, that we will do everything possible to stop the attacks
from. Now, this comes in the context of last week. The Tapau House, I believe, has been set on fire. Can you tell me about that? Is it the touring problem?
We believe it could be related to politics, then again, it could not. Our investigations are continuing, and hopefully we will get down to the bottom of this. There are appeals going on, and we've actually asked people to come forward with information. The governor of the Western Islands province, Honorable Tom Olga, has actually gone on public and has issued a reward for information as to who bent the building. At this point in time, we don't really know why the building was burnt, and if it was purposely set on fire. As I said, investigations are continuing, so until that is completed, we can't say much.
And have arrests been made?
Actually, the driver, security guards were then focusing for the burning of the building. And at this point in time, the reports that they are not saying anything. It's very likely that we will keep them with our investigations.
That was Papua New Guinea Police Superintendent Dominic Tucker talking to Dubravka Veloda. Fiji human rights lawyer Imrana Jalal says France has given a clear account of the country's situation to the United Nations Human Rights Council. And a new UN human rights monitoring system, Tonga, was the first Pacific country to be questioned. Tuvalu is to appear before the UN Committee in December. Ms. Jalal spoke about the process to Walter Michael.
The United Nations Commission on Human Rights has been replaced by a new body called the Human Rights Council. And it's got over 40 members of the UN who are members of the Human Rights Council. And they've developed this new reporting mechanism called the Universal Periodic Review, which requires every member of the United Nations to appear before it, scrutiny those countries that never ratify human rights conventions and therefore never report to the various human rights bodies like the Human Rights Committee and CEDAW and Child Rights Committee and so on. So it's a new mechanism. It just began literally this year. And two Pacific Island countries are before it this year. The first country that reported was Tonga. And Tonga has historically not ever appeared before any of the human rights committees. And in fact, they have quite a poor record of ratifying and reporting. So far, they've only ratified the Child Rights Convention, I believe. And they are thinking about ratifying CEDAW. So literally this means that they've never reported on anything to do with human rights in their country. So Tonga was the first Pacific Island country to appear. And Tonga gave quite a candid report, meaning that they did not try to evade the situation. They didn't really... they responded candidly and clearly to the Human Rights Council. I suppose their candor was... partly as a result of they had good advice about lay your human rights situation record before the Human Rights Council. There's no point in beating about the bush. They'll know about it anyway. Because the NGOs in Tonga gave excellent support, which was extremely candid. So it therefore meant that the Tongan government was encouraged to do a good report, which they did. And the Human Rights Council questioned them on two major issues. One was nuclear democracy in Tonga. The Tongan government basically said that they were moving step by step towards democracy. And the other issue that they were questioned on was about the human rights of the people who were arrested and prosecuted after the riots in November 2006. Tonga was not prepared to go the step of saying committing themselves to changing land rights for women in Tonga, which you may know is a big controversial issue, because land is mainly for men, largely for men, and it's constitutionally protected that way.
So we're speaking human rights. In this edition of Dateline Pacific from Radio New Zealand International, I'm Megan Whelan. Thanks for listening. Happy family.
Kia ora ana, nā loa lelei, akalofa lahi atu, kā aloha me, i day two, yoshi, nisa bula vanata, kia ora koutou, and warm Pacific greeting.
Welcome to the program, and as the title in trade winds this week, we look at efforts to improve electricity production in the Pacific. Air New Zealand reviews its link to Tonga and Samoa and the ADB has advice for Tonga, the first bulletin of business news of the past week. The Asian Development Bank says the current world financial crisis shows the need for Pacific countries to continue with programs of structural reform. The call comes in a new study called Navigating the Global Storm, which says the impact may be less than sound economic management. It says the key response should be to reinvigorate structural reform, including rural productivity and transport, communication and basic public services. Craig Sutton, who is an ADB economist, says governments need to undertake public system reform to help fund infrastructure projects.
And that will both give them room in the budget
to spend on infrastructure,
and it also increases their capacity to deliver results. Structural reform is an ongoing process. And